Yo, what up?
Hey, yo, what up?
Hey, yo, flip flop, what up, fam?
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Monica.
Welcome.
This is Lawless Heathens. That was gross.
It's so hard to breathe right now.
So, y'all, all 10 of our listeners.
13.
Yes, but 3 of them are our wives.
How many wives do you have?
3. To our 13 listeners, you may have noticed. You may not have because you don't care that much, and even better. But you may have noticed we missed a week. That's on me. That's my bad. I've been sick. I've been real sick. This has
not
been like
COVID.
No, I don't have the Rona. This has been like the never-ending allergy sickness. For anybody who doesn't know about the Ohio River Valley, don't ever go here because the weather is the worst. The allergies are the worst.
The government is the worst.
I mean, really. Fucking Yertle the Turtle. Hey, he's minority leader now, dude.
Good morning, Senate Minority Leader.
That's one good thing 2021 has delivered to us.
I saw a meme on Facebook and it said, 2020 went home, put on a wig, and came back as 2021. I was like, she sure as fuck did.
Yesterday during the riots, protests, whatever you want to call it.
Terrorist attack?
The storming of the Capitol.
Domestic terrorist attack?
Yeah. Somebody tweeted, I see you December 37th, 2020. Monica's about to spit her coffee. Oh, no. So anyways, in summation, I didn't want to put out bad product while I was sick and feeling like holy hell. So here we are.
So now we're going to put out bad product while we feel great. I just hacked a lung on live podcast.
Now you're good.
Now we can edit that. That's fine.
We can just edit it out or edit it in.
Leave it in. Enhance the hacking.
Yes.
Oh, that was good. I see you December 30th. Oh, my God. There's so many funny memes.
I know. And you know what? The internet always comes through in, like, the worst of times. It's like...
Don't they call it, like, doom scrolling? Is that what it's called?
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know what the youth talk about these days. Doom scrolling.
The youths?
I am the youth.
No, we are legit old enough to call other people the youths now, though.
Really?
Yes, because there's a whole generation of people younger than us who, basically run the world now. Look at fucking TikTok.
Oh.
God bless America.
Speaking of TikTok and lawless heathenry.
Oh.
I know this is Kristen's week, so she's going to tell us a different story. But did you see the defamation of character that was a problem of TikTok? So this dumb bitch, and I'm going to call her that because she's a dumb bitch, who appeared on Dr. Phil for licking a toilet seat on an airplane during COVID.
Okay.
Started a rumor that Jeffree Star and Kanye West were having an affair. And this blew up everywhere. Like, every single TMZ, The Esquire, like, all that shit was, like, reporting. Kim K and Kanye getting a divorce, which they are. And then they attached that Jeffree Star and him were having an affair. And Jeffree Star's over here just sharing all the memes. And, like, not like, outright denying it, but definitely not confirming it either. Just being a dick.
Right.
And, like...
Well, that sounds, like, so far-fetched that I feel like Jeffree Star is just, like, yeah.
Well, I mean, it obviously occurred... Like, the girl came out and was like, oh, I didn't expect it to go this far. Like,
oh God,
you
yes,
dumb
you
bitch.
And just like you expected it to go far when you licked the toilet seat.
It's fame hunger. It's the I'm an influencer. So I guess like and I don't know the validity of this, so we can cut it out if whatever. It's just funny to you, like me and you talk about it. But I think they both have brought defamation of character lawsuits against her.
Good. So like you can't just go out and spout a ton of bullshit, especially things that could like ruin people's lives. Like let's say Kim K and Kanye were not having issues like they had been for the last several months, and this story took hold and legitimately caused problems. Like you are hurting someone's life.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, you dumb bitch. Kim Kardashian is a lawyer. She has a law degree.
I thought she was still in school.
I think she's done.
Oh, get like, it, Kim K?
She was part of the people that helped get that one girl free who was like, I cannot think of her name. They did a documentary on her. And there's a lot of controversy, which maybe we can do an episode on her. But
that one girl?
She was sentenced to life in prison for killing her sex trafficker.
Oh, I remember her.
Yeah, and so she kept filing an appeal and all this other stuff. And then finally, like, Kim K learned about her case in law school, paid for, like, her lawyers and all this other stuff, and, like, actually, I think, was a part of, like, the appeal writing process.
Hmm.
And was a part of the reason that
she got off?
She got released. She got, what is it called? Not pardoned, but,
was her sentence commuted?
Yeah, commuted. Her sentence was commuted.
Wow.
So, now she, like,
wrote, Kim K?
She, like, wrote a book, the girl did, and she's been in a documentary, and there's still a lot of, like, controversy surrounding whether or not she should have gotten off, because, like,
sure.
Apparently there was, like,
she did kill someone.
She did kill someone, but the reason they said she deserved to go to prison was because, like, she had a chance to get away, but instead chose to kill the person, which I don't know how much of it is true. I haven't watched the documentary. I don't really know a lot about the case, but
that's like saying someone who is a victim of, like, spousal abuse or something like that. Like, there's so much psychologically that goes on with that, that, like,
that's, like, a whole, like, thing in the criminal justice world. That's, like, a whole defense, kind of like the gay panic theory.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the actual term of it is. I could look it up and tell you, but there is a book written called Sisters in Pain, and it's written by women in the correctional system who have all been convicted of killing their significant others who had, like, either beat them, and, like, they tell their story and what led up to why they did what they did, and they're like, if you knew my story and why I did what I did, you probably wouldn't think the same of me sitting on this side of the fence.
Hmm.
So I thought that that was, like, a really good book.
Interesting. All right. You ready to get into today's topic?
Yeah, we're going to have to cut all that. Sorry, bud.
No, we don't have to cut all of it.
Oh, well then. Just the part of me coughing my guts up.
Okay, that's fun. All right, you ready for today?
I'm ready, Freddy.
I'm going full tilt into murder.
Mm.
Murder. Today, we are going to talk about spree killer Mark Barton.
I've
Y'all
never heard of
this. It happened in, so we were kids. It happened in 1999. I had heard of him. I had heard of him on a different podcast. I don't think I knew all of these details about it. I'm gonna go deep into it.
Ooh.
Because the fascinating thing to me with, like, spree killers and stuff like that are, like, people who just out of the blue kill somebody, which in a lot of ways is, to me anyways, more fascinating than serial killers.
Oh yeah.
Is the lead up to it,
like, what was
and
the
how it happened. What turned a normal person,
yep,
into somebody who on a whim just went and killed tons of people, and that was it.
I've coined it, and I actually did a really interesting topic about this, but I call it the kill switch.
Mm.
And
kill switch engage.
But no, I talked about it in terms of suicide and, like, what happens, like, because I mean your brain essentially, it its function is always keep body alive.
Mm-hmm.
So what switch do you turn off to override that function? So again, what switch do you turn off in your brain to override the function of...
Killing is bad.
I'm going to kill someone. And I've always liked that. Like,
yeah.
Not I've always liked the idea. Like, it's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Like, that part's... Not like, absolutely. I want to go and kill somebody, but, like, that fascinates me.
Yeah. It's equal parts fascinating and to me also kind of terrifying to talk about stories like this, because you're literally taking a normal person, something happens, a switch flips, and they kill a bunch of people. And it's cases like these that I think just drive home the point more and more. As much as people would like to think, and I'm including myself in that, as much as I would like to think
that I'm a sound individual,
very lawful being, everyone
has
is capable of murder. Mm-hmm. Everyone is. That is how we're wired. And it seems so heinous in today's world because we're so civilized, but people forget not that long ago in history, it was a normal thing for people to kill each other.
But
because it was a survival thing.
Not only that, if you think about it, like, how many movies depict a futuristic world where that becomes... I mean, you got The Purge, you got The Hunger Games, you got, you know, all these different movies where it almost kind of, like, glorifies the idea of turning that empathy button just straight off and being able to go out and kill people.
Yeah.
Just, like, no empathy whatsoever. And I think, again, it's terrifying. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who Bailey Sirian? I think that's how you say her name is.
Mm-mm.
She's a kind of like a YouTube star, but I see her on Facebook when I'm, like, just scrolling.
Is
through.
She the one who does makeup?
Does her makeup, yeah.
Yeah, I follow her.
I was like...
I just didn't know her name.
Yeah, she's really funny. She did a video on this girl who, like... I don't know her name. I don't know a lot of the story. I was just watching it. It's the first time I ever heard of it. Where she was, like, super depressed, all this stuff. Like, one day called out of school. Was like, I'm not going to school. And, like, started picking off kids at an elementary school with a rifle.
Oh.
And then when she got caught, like, she was in a hostage. Like, she barricaded her house in her. Mm-hmm. She barricaded herself in her house. And, like... Apparently, a magazine called her while she was, like, negotiating with police. And they asked her, you know, like, why do you do it? And she said, Mondays are boring. I wanted to liven it up.
Oh, my God.
And, like, I didn't get to finish the video because I got, like, a phone
call.
That's a
serious fucking psychopath.
Yeah, but, like, apparently, like, I mean, we could probably do an entire episode on her. Like.
Oh, for sure.
Freaking weird. But, like, just nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing there. Like. You just run your hand across it, like, what's up? Who's home? And she's just like, I was just bored.
Yeah. Well, what the story I'm about to tell you, I will say this to, you know, somebody on the outside looking in. Nobody is going to listen to this, except if you got some issues. Nobody is going to listen to this and think, oh, that's justified.
Oh, God.
But, you know, in his head it was. So, this is spree killer Mark Barton. Tons of great resources out there about this. I got most of my information from a really fantastic article published in Time Magazine called Portrait of a Killer and Murderpedia. If you've never been on Murderpedia, they're doing the Lord's work. It is a wonderful source of information.
Murderpedia. Man.
Yep.
If we were strictly, like, murder podcasts, that would probably be our Bible.
Oh, 100%. I'm an avid listener of My Favorite Murder, and I hear them talking about using Murderpedia as a source very often.
Yeah.
Because it's just great, and it's a collection of news stories and just an unbelievable amount of information on a lot of people. So, really nice. All right. Our story starts on Thursday, July 29th, 1999.
Oh, shit.
A man walks into the offices of Momentum Securities, Inc., which is a day trading firm in Atlanta, Georgia. After chatting for a few minutes, he pulls out two handguns and begins shooting. When officers arrived at the scene a few minutes later, they found four people dead and many others injured. Officers heard muffled voices in a room in the offices where they found several people huddled together, and a woman shouted at them, Mark Barton shot us. across the street at All Tech Investment Group, more shots rang out. When officers arrived at that scene, they found 5 people dead and several injured. So, of course, a manhunt for Mark Barton ensues. And by the end of the spree and the end of this day, 13 people will be dead and 13 more injured.
Oh, my God. What's this total at now? Like what? Just 13 people total injured?
13 people total dead and 13 people total injured. So 26 people.
26 people.
In some way impacted. All right. So let's talk about Mark Barton.
What the fuck's wrong with you, Mark Barton? He doesn't like investment firms, obviously.
Well, wait until you hear why.
Okay.
So Mark was born on April 2nd, 1955 in Stockbridge, Georgia, but was raised in South Carolina. What up, South Carolina? That's where your wife from.
That's scary.
So he was an only child to parents in the Air Force. I couldn't find a ton of information on his childhood, but for all intents and purposes, it seems like he had a pretty normal, decent childhood.
Usually if you find no information, that's a ballpark shot there. I mean, it could be good or it could be that maybe it was just like a really dark family secret or whatever. But I mean, traditionally, whenever you see stuff about spree killers or something, it's always like, oh, they had the worst childhood. Oh, they were heavily addicted to drugs.
I feel like that's typically serial killers. Either that or they have injuries to the head.
Serial killers is killing in a patternistic sequence kind of thing for a purpose. Spree killers is just something just happens and they just go on a fucking spree.
I believe the literal definition for serial killers is that you killed 2 or more completely separate times.
Okay.
And that's it.
No pattern involved?
No, it's just the number of times you have killed people.
Hmm.
Whereas spree killers are literally, they go on a spree.
Just as many people they can at any given time.
Well, not necessarily, but just they go on a spree.
Fucking shit. It's,
and they spree.
It's kind of thing. When I get ice cream in my hands, there's but just no telling where it's going to go.
But it's very isolated incidents with serial killers. So they killed one person day A. Killed another person day B. Two completely separate incidences.
I'm more stuck on the, okay. So, for example, would we consider like what happened in Las Vegas, like that massive shooting, would we call that a spree killing? Or would we not, since it was just at one specific time and it didn't go for a length of time?
Does that make sense? Well, one specific time would indicate spree killing.
Okay.
It was just
spree.
Yeah. And even, so... There are so like I said in the beginning, there are at least 2 different places.
Yeah. That I mean, he's went. A wanderer. He's wandering.
But they were back to back.
Yeah.
It was all part of the same quote unquote incident.
Okay.
So he's a spree killer.
He's spreeing.
He did it all spreeing basically all at once.
So wait, he killed 13 people with handguns?
Wait.
Okay.
Why are you already jumping into that? I'm talking about when he was born.
I want to know.
Wait.
What the fuck's wrong with you, Mark Barton?
6 pages of information.
Nice.
Wait.
I'm going to learn so much.
All right. Back to Mark.
Sorry.
Okay. So he was an only child to parents in the Air Force. He got a degree in chemistry from the University of South Carolina in 1979. So he's a fairly smart dude. And he met Deborah Spivey while working as a night auditor and then married her in 1979. So him and old Deborah got married. So Mark's work ended up moving him and Deborah to Atlanta for a time. So remember, they were in South Carolina, now they're in Atlanta. And then eventually they moved to Texarkana, Texas. In 1988, he started a company called TLC Manufacturing with some friends, and he became president of the company. However, just 2 years later, in 1990, Mark was fired, reportedly due to behavioral issues, with someone in the company commenting that Mark, quote, had a short fuse. So something went down there. The day after Mark's final day with the company, someone broke into the offices and stole chemical formulas and erased sensitive files. So, at this time, Mark was arrested on burglary charges.
Okay, I was going to say, we know who that someone
yes.
was.
Okay. Yeah, it's obvious. So he got arrested on burglary charges. But a board member called police that same day and said they had come to an agreement with Mark and they wanted to drop the charges. So they came to an agreement. Life moved on. He's done with the company. By the way, I looked it up. This company doesn't, TLC Manufacturing is not in business anymore.
Probably for good reason.
I think unrelated to this.
Oh.
But whatever. So Mark and Deborah and their new son, Matthew, ended up moving to Georgia, where Mark took up a job as a chemical salesman. While there, he met a young married receptionist named Leanne Lang. And by May 1993, you guessed it, they're having an affair.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Fucking Mark.
So Mark started to take extra care with his appearance, as one does when they're trying to impress somebody, such as he upgraded his wardrobe. And he started going to the tanning bed. So naturally, if one is not doing these things before and suddenly they're doing them now, it's going to make somebody suspicious. Guess who was suspicious?
Oh, Debbie.
Deborah.
Deborah.
And for good reason.
Yeah.
Deborah knew what the fuck was up.
You look like a burnt peach.
Yes.
Why, Mark?
Where'd you get those new clothes and why?
Armani ties. We oh, shop God. At the Gap. What about Matthew? I'm sorry, Deborah. You're going through a lot, man. I did not mean to make fun of you. Like,
poor
I'm sorry.
Deborah.
Like, you right.
Okay. So around the same time, so he's having an affair with old Leanne. Sorry.
She has to know.
Deborah?
No, Leanne. Leanne?
Leanne has to know what?
That he's married.
Yeah. They both know that each other was married. They knew. Oh my they knew what was up. Scandal. She was married. He was married. They fucking knew.
Fucking scandals.
So around the same time, Mark tries taking out a $1 million insurance policy on Deborah, but ended up dropping it down to $600,000 because of the premium cost.
Are you, mother?
He would later tell the insurance provider that the policy was Deborah's idea, and she had developed an inflated sense of self-worth because she was married to a company president. Quick reminder, he wasn't company president anymore.
His manipulative tendencies this was no bounds.
3 years after he got fired, but whatever.
This okay. is what we like to call a sociopath.
So then in June 1993, during a trip that Mark and Leanne took together to North Carolina, Mark stated that he would, quote, be free to marry Leanne by October 1st.
Wit.
Yep. Leanne at the time was also working to end her own marriage. And by the end of August, she had found a new apartment and moved in with her sister. So she was prepping to start a new life with Mark.
Mm-hmm.
So Labor Day weekend, 1993, a couple weeks after this trip, Deborah takes a trip to Alabama to spend the holiday with her mother. Mark was to stay home with their children, Matthew and the baby Michelle.
Oh.
By the end of the holiday weekend, Deborah and her mother's bodies were found hacked to death by what authorities believe to be an axe-like tool that was never found.
Wait, what? That was... What?
Yep. And this is not the main part of the story.
What? I mean, you just... I hope not, because you casually just slewed that in there like, oh, he evaded his taxes.
I'm not saying he did it. I'm saying by the end of the weekend, their bodies were found.
I'm just saying...
Hacked up with an axe-like tool.
Seems suspicious.
I'm not saying who did it.
He's like to the tune of his
don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious. Don't be.
That's
suspicious.
Him doing axe whack while singing that tune. Don't be suspicious. Don't be. Oh fucking
yeah!
I feel bad. I'm sorry, Deborah. R.I.P. Yo and poor Debbie's Deborah. Mom.
Poor R.I.P. Deb and Mama Deb.
I hope you guys got a couple good shots on his wang.
So to make this even better, on the day of Deborah's funeral, so less than an hour after it ended, police showed up at Mark's house to search for evidence and began spraying the home and Mark's car with Luminol. This was when Luminol was still used. Don't know if you don't know this, Luminol is not used that much anymore because the like science behind it has been called into question.
Yeah.
But still, I love the idea of Luminol. So anyways, they're spraying the shit out of this place with luminol. They get a hit in Mark's car on the ignition and on a seatbelt. At the time, Mark was not able to explain why the blood was there, but said to the officers, "If there is a ton of blood in my car, why aren't you arresting me? Well, now why am I not in handcuffs?" Prick little shit.
He is confident.
Yes. So the police, they had to tell him that there just wasn't enough blood to warrant an arrest at that time. They found a little bit on the ignition. They found a little bit on a seatbelt.
Well, that's circumstantial at best. Yeah, I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, if his car...
That's his wife.
...lit up...
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, because, I mean, I could have got a paper cut on my hand. Something could have happened. Right. Like, I mean, my wife could have used my car. Like, at the end of the day, there's not... I mean, it does suck that they told him that, because someone with that kind of narcissistic tendencies is going to be like, I'm free to do whatever I want. I can go on a spree killing, apparently. He better not hurt those babies.
Will you let me tell the damn story?
Oh, my fucking God.
Let me tell the story. I'm not even done with Deborah.
This is how I act in movies, y'all. I'm not even kidding.
I'm like, still 6 years before the spree killing, okay?
Oh, my God.
We're in 1993.
That's when I was born.
Yeah.
Wait, when did this happen? Labor Day?
He killed, yeah. Oh, well, allegedly.
I was 3 months old. Wait, June, July, August. I was 4 months old.
I love that took you so long.
The reason it did is because I was born on the very last day of June.
Yeah.
So I was like, can I count that as a month?
Oh, my God.
All right, I'm sorry. Derailed us.
You're fine. You're fine.
All right, 6 months before, 6 years before.
6 years before. Okay, so
the blood
was on the ignition, blood was on the seatbelt. So Mark later tells police that the blood found in the car has to be his. He had remembered that he had cut his finger really bad the previous summer. Fine. However, Mark refused to give any DNA to confirm the blood was his and refused to take a lie detector test. Now, quick side note. Before we move forward here, you should always refuse to take a lie detector test, because those things are garbage.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a science. Like, it's predicated on the fact
it's
that...
It's a proven science that it doesn't work.
Yes, exactly.
It's very proven.
So, Crime Junkie, the girls over at Crime Junkie says this all the time, and I couldn't agree more. Like, do not take lie detector tests.
Mm-mm.
It'll just be used against you if the results don't come out good.
No, even if you pass and they have enough to say that your heart rhythm jumped in a certain area, they can still use that against you even if you passed and be like, well, why'd your heart rhythm... Bitch, I'm taking a polygraph test. Yeah. What the fuck you mean?
Or they can just lie to you about it.
I mean,
that's a tactic.
There is literally no reason.
No, it's not admissible in court.
Even if, and I'm sorry, I'm not saying, like, I agree with you if you decide to go on a spree killing. But, like, it's just, if you're trying to, you know, fight your case, that's just not a smart way to go about it.
No. So I can't hold him refusing the lie detector test against him. Now, I can hold him refusing to give DNA. Mm-hmm. Because if you're that confident, just give your fucking DNA. Like, what's the big deal? Anyways. So, long story short, with the deal with Deborah... Police were not able to uncover any evidence that definitively tied Mark to the scene, and the blood evidence in Mark's car was destroyed. So Mark claimed that he had spilled soda in the car. So that's gone. And so because of this, and in spite of the police believing strongly that Mark was guilty, as does everybody else, they just weren't able to charge him with it. They didn't have anything solid. They had no witnesses placing him at the scene.
It's one of those, like we all know you did it.
We just can't prove it.
Yeah, we can't get there yet.
Yeah.
That's some shit, though. I don't know. Like,
poor Deborah.
Just fucking get a divorce.
I mean, for real.
Like, I'm sorry.
I don't get it.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm gonna go off. I'm angry.
No, you're fine. Let's keep going so you can get angrier. Okay, so in... Nope. Jumped forward too much. There I am. Mark and Leanne's relationship moved really quick after Deborah's death. Just 1 week after,
shocker,
Leanne was having sleepovers. A month after, Leanne's divorce was finalized, which, no fault to her, she was doing the right thing. She was getting divorced. And then 6 months after, the two moved in together in Morrow, Georgia, where no one knew of the murders of Deborah and her mom. So they were wanting to start clean. in
a fresh start.
Yes. In February 1994, Mark's daughter Michelle tells a staff member at her daycare that her father had molested her. So Mark was ordered to go through mental evaluations through which a psychologist determined that Mark was fully capable of committing murder. They also struggled to build a strong case against him in the case of Michelle's accusation because, A, she was so young at the time. I want to say she was like 2 or 3. And it would be really, really difficult in that case to revoke custody. So really all they had was her word. And as a very, very young child, they couldn't prove anything.
Well, I mean, that would require putting that poor child on the stand. Because, I mean, at that point, all you have is a testimony. And especially at that time.
Well, and with kids that young, it can be really, really hard for them to be reliable.
And, I mean, let me say it this way. Kids, no matter what age, they may know something's not right. They may know it's wrong. I mean, obviously, if a kid that young felt strongly enough to go to someone and say something like that, they understand the brevity of the situation, but they cannot comprehend it.
I don't necessarily agree.
Really?
Yeah. Because I also know that kids that little, they may not understand what that means. And they heard somebody say it, that's and so true. They repeated it.
That's true.
So that detail was a difficult one for me. Like, he could have done it. He could not have done it. I have no clue. And there's not
enough
evidence.
Mental evaluation is a really good point in this process, though, because the investigator found that he is fully capable of murder.
And there were quotes from that person saying that, you know, obviously hindsight is 20/20. Looking back on that, it like gave him chills after what happens later, because obviously you can't do anything to someone just because you determine they're capable of committing murder, because that doesn't mean they will. But, you know,
no, but it's always like, were there signs?
Yes.
To the left, to the right, and look straight fucking in front of you, bud.
Yes, there were signs. Okay. So Mark and Leanne get married in 1995. So 2 years after poor Deb's murder. Apparently, their marriage was pretty rocky. And neighbors even noticed. They were pretty privy to the issues going on in their marriage. Apparently, Leanne was prone to leaving. It just taken off for a couple days. So it was very obvious to people that things weren't all hunky-dory. So in 1997, 4 years after Deborah's death, the life insurance company that Deborah's policy was through, they ended up settling for $450,000 instead of the full $600,000 because of the toss-up about her death.
Okay.
So they settled for $450,000. But they stipulated that $150,000 of that settlement be put into a trust for Matthew and Michelle.
Oh.
The rest of the money, so $300,000, Mark used to fund a new day trading venture. And he was very soon day trading full time. So he switched careers. Now he's a day trader.
And I very recently learned what day trading means. And that basically, if I'm correct, you can correct me if I'm wrong. That means you go and you trade stocks in the stock market. You buy really low, sell really high every single day. That's like your goal.
Well, I mean, you should always buy low and sell high.
Right, but you do it on a daily basis.
You're dealing in stocks every single day.
Yeah, so I mean, and it's very high reward, very risky as well.
Yes,
so like
very high risk.
A lot of people nowadays get shit. I mean, because stock trading it's never been easier. I mean, now, I mean, it's at our fingertips. We can do it. Like, I did it earlier. I bought a new stock in a different, like, thing. But I see a lot of shit on a lot of the things that I read out about, like, day traders and how they cause huge, like, bubbles and all this other stuff. And
yeah.
So, like,
They can cause massive fluctuations because they tend to buy and sell in
so
really
quickly.
Large quantities.
Yeah. So quickly. Which, yeah. I mean, if you have $300,000, which is a lot back at that time, I mean, it hasn't really fluctuated much since then, but like, I mean, that's still a lot of money. So yep. You could make a pretty big profit if you do it right.
That's the key, doing it right, though.
I mean, it's like gambling.
That's exactly what it is. It's gambling.
Fancy gambling.
Yeah. You can call it investment all you want. It's gambling.
Yeah.
Because you can make your money back or you can lose it all.
I lost a lot on wind, solar power in the oceans today, by the way.
Did you?
Yeah. I bought it for 50 cents. It's now worth like one penny.
I really love
actually
going and looking at my Tesla stock. So I bought stock in Tesla a couple years ago, and it has just done nothing but explode, and it makes my heart very happy. What I'm not happy about is a couple years ago, I also bought stock in the cannabis market because that was starting to become a real thing, and there was a, you know, a big movement. That's not doing hot.
Bruh.
What?
I gained over $40 today in stocks.
Hey.
Also, I own 0.14% of my Tesla stock. Fuck you.
Hey, that's better than 0%.
You should check your stock.
Okay, let's get back to it.
Sorry.
Okay, so Mark is now a full-time day trader. Let's fast forward to July 1999. Remember, that was the month and year we started it. So Mark lost approximately $105,000 in two months trading internet stocks at Momentum Securities.
Oh. Shocker.
Yeah, remember that? On Tuesday, July 27th, 1999, which is 2 days before Mark's rampage, Momentum Securities closes his trading account after he couldn't meet a margin call, which is basically cash to cover any debts due to falling stock prices. So to reopen the account, Mark writes a check for $50,000, but the check bounces. And that causes Momentum Securities to deny trading privileges on Wednesday and on Thursday. Some reports suggest, I don't know how valid this is, but some reports have suggested that in the year leading up, Mark had lost $300,000 day trading.
And so he lost
it all. So long story short, he's not very good at this.
I mean, he is very bad at this.
He's not good at this.
Like, very bad.
Okay. Be it. On Thursday, July 29th, 1999, just before 2:30 p.m., Mark walks into the Momentum Securities offices and begins talking with the people who worked there, who knew him from his time trading with the company. He's familiar with tons of people there. He chats for a few minutes and then says, "It's a bad day for trading and it's about to get worse." He then pulls out two handguns and just begins firing. The first 911 calls were received at 2:56 and 2:58 p.m., with the callers reporting gunshots and multiple people dead. The first officer arrives at 3 o'clock, and after finding an extremely bloody scene, calls for backup, which arrives, from what I could see, reportedly within seconds.
Oh, wow.
So officers find several people hiding in a room, where someone had actually thrown a computer out of the window to try to attract attention. And this is the room that I talked about at the beginning, where the woman told the officers that the shooter was Mark Barton. So they knew
who it was
immediately.
Okay.
Real quick. So across the street, Mark had walked into the offices of All Tech Investments Group and started chatting with some people he knew there about the Dow's 200-point slide that day. Suddenly, at 3:07 p.m., shots were fired, and Mark walks out to the trading floor. He locks eyes with Nell Jones and shoots at her, missing her forehead by inches.
Oh.
Nell said later that Mark seemed very calm and determined, and while leaving, said, "I hope this won't ruin your trading day." So a security guard informs police that he heard gunshots coming from the All Tech Investments Group offices. And when officers arrived, they find 5 people dead, slumped over their computers, and several other people injured. At 3:15 p.m., less than an hour after Mark arrived at the Momentum Securities offices, 9 people had been shot dead in 2 different office buildings, and several others had been injured. So as you can imagine, the scene was absolute chaos, with ambulances flooding the streets and police officers everywhere. not to mention all of the other civilians in the area who were witnesses to the attacks or at the very least heard gunshots. Just mass chaos. So around this same time, the property manager of the apartment complex that Mark lived in with his wife and children called the police after noticing that rent was late and he hadn't really seen anyone coming or going. I couldn't find this specified, but from what I could tell, it was just he called for a welfare check. So the police officer arrives. The manager lets him into the apartment. The officer finds Matthew and Michelle dead in their beds, having died from blunt force trauma to the head. On top of Matthew was a video game. On top of Michelle was a stuffed animal. And next to each body was a handwritten note. Leanne was found dead in a closet with another handwritten note, and a longer typed letter was found in the living room. So I'm going to read you the typed letter found in the living room.
What did he say to the kids?
It was dated July 29th, 1999, 6:38 a.m.
Oh my God.
So hours before he went and shot up these two offices. So it says, "To whom it may concern, Leanne is in the master bedroom closet under a blanket. I killed her on Tuesday night. I killed Matthew and Michelle Wednesday night. There may be similarities between these deaths and the death of my first wife, Deborah Spivey. However, I deny killing her and her mother. There's no reason for me to lie now. It just seemed like a quiet way to kill and a relatively painless way to die. There was little pain. All of them were dead in less than 5 minutes. I hit them with a hammer in their sleep and then put them face down in a bathtub to make sure they did not wake up in pain. To make sure they were dead. I am so sorry. I wish I didn't. Words cannot tell the agony. Why did I? I have been dying since October. I wake up at night so afraid, so terrified that I couldn't be that afraid while awake. It has taken its toll. I have come to hate this life and this system of things. I have come to have no hope. I killed the children to exchange them for 5 minutes of pain for a lifetime of pain. I forced myself to do it to keep them from suffering so much later. No mother, no father, no relatives. The fears of the father are transferred to the son. It was from my father to me and from me to my son. He already had it, and now to be left alone, I had to take him with me. I killed Leanne because she was one of the main reasons for my demise, as I planned to kill the others. I really wish I hadn't killed her now. She really couldn't help it, and I love her so much anyway. I know that Jehovah will take care of all of them in the next life. I'm sure the details don't matter. There is no excuse, no good reason. I am sure no one will understand. If they could, I wouldn't want them to. I just write these things to say why. Please know that I love Leanne, Matthew, and Michelle with all of my heart. If Jehovah is willing, I would like to see all of them again in the resurrection to have a second chance. I don't plan to live very much longer, just long enough to kill as many of the people that greedily sought my destruction. You should kill me if you can. Mark O. Barton."
Pull a bullet in his brain, please.
Yeah.
Someone fucking murder him.
Yeah.
Please.
Basically.
Like, I firmly believe that there are some people that should not be alive. And this is a prime example. Because to have them alive is more dangerous for them. Like, I mean, it's kind of like the same idea with, like, oh, you have a rabid dog. You have a rabid fucking human. Put him down.
Obviously, there was something wrong. I genuinely wish that he had gotten help prior to all of this. I don't understand. And he even says it in the letter. He doesn't expect people to understand. And I don't think anybody who isn't like this could truly understand.
I was
going to
say, if you do understand, then that is when you should also maybe go seek counseling of some sort. Check yourself in somewhere. Talk to someone who can help you.
Yeah. I don't know. And with all of this stuff, is it true? You don't even know if it's true or not. He could just be spouting a bunch of bullshit. Maybe he did just wanted to kill them, but he was like, I'm going to try to look like the good guy. You don't know. He could be lying about killing Deborah and Deborah's mom. Like, you don't know.
The narcissism knows no bounds. I mean, especially if someone's got a hero complex. Like, I mean, I did it because I did it, but I want people to see me as a martyr if I had to do it because kind of thing. Yeah. Like, I had no choice. This world is terrible, but I'm the evil, blah, blah, blah.
This world is terrible, but everybody else seems to
be fine.
Figure it out, okay?
Ugh. I mean, no, we're all not fine. Everybody's not fine. But
no, I mean everybody struggles through life, but definitely the majority figures it out and goes on to live a long life, and they don't resort to this kind of stuff. He didn't even give his kids a chance.
I mean, he projected his failures onto his kids. I think the thing that bothers me the most is the passing of whatever he was talking about, passing it down. My father gave it to me, and I've given it to my son. That is what stuck me. What is he talking about? Because I have an idea.
So he was talking about fear. He said the fears of the father are transferred to the son. Which makes me think one of two things. Either it's another classic case of your dad was fucked up.
So I'm going to be
fucked up. And so you're fucked up. Or Mark is just fucked up. Because you can have a fine childhood and still be fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one knows why.
I mean,
if we knew, we would have figured it out.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The human brain is a fucking maze of just...
Right. There are plenty of people who you can't point to anything specific in their past, in their childhood, anything like that. They just go fucking crazy.
The new Newton shooter? Adam Lanza? Apparently.
Newton?
Newtown? Newtown.
Oh.
I just call it Newton because I like the way it sounds better. But it's Newtown. Where he just shot all those little babies, little preschoolers.
Yeah.
Like, apparently he was, like, the parents knew something was wrong, sent him to go get help, but they were like, I don't know what could have happened. Like, he had a great childhood. Like, we don't know why.
Yeah. Some people are just messed up. Some people are. Okay. Let's keep going.
There's more.
At 3:30 p.m., We're
no, I'm trying to not sniffle into the mic.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
So at 3:30 p.m., a man wearing a red shirt and khaki pants was spotted walking on the street in the area of the shootings. A witness stated that he looked strange. He was carrying something like a knapsack on his back, and she said he was acting nervous. Witnesses saw him walk in one direction, sees a police cruiser coming towards him, so he turns, walks another direction, sees more officers, turns again, and then runs and disappears into some woods. For the next 4 hours, officers searched the surrounding area and offices in search of Mark. People weren't allowed to leave their offices for fear Mark was still there.
Oh, God.
Police dogs were brought in to aid in the search, and even the FBI was there helping. So, they pulled out all the stops.
Mass casualties everywhere.
So at 7:40 p.m., security guards at Town Center Mall spotted Mark's van in the parking lot. Around this same time, a woman was walking to her car when Mark approached her. He had a black bag and had changed into a blue short-sleeved shirt. According to reports, Mark said to the woman, "Don't scream or I'll shoot you." The woman began backing away, and Mark said, "Don't run or I'll shoot you." So the woman runs. Mark does not shoot. To which I said, I wrote a note here, "Good on you, girl. Get the hell out of there."
Zigzag.
Like, fuck.
Zigzag, zigzag. You know what? Can I stop and just say how fucking methodical he had to have been to change? Like, this, like.
I've been wondering. We'll talk about this more at the end.
Okay.
We'll talk about it more
at the end. Sorry. I'm glad that kind of, like, pathway there.
Yep. We're almost done. So we'll talk about it more here in a minute.
You are such a good summary person. You surmise things beautifully.
Oh, don't give me the credit for this. I stole most of this from that Portrait of a Killer article. So whoever wrote that Time Magazine article, a fucking plus.
10 out of 10, bud.
Yes.
Or chick.
14 out of 10.
Go you.
Yes. Okay. So another woman spots Mark and recognizes him as the alleged suspect in the earlier shootings, which is like, what? How does that ever happen? So she carefully calls 911 to report the sighting, of course, fearing that Mark may see her. So she's trying to do it real on the DL. So Barton ends up, he starts leaving in his van. So she follows him.
Mm. Yes, bitch.
Only briefly.
Oh.
So he ends up turning one way and she turns the other. And in the article, it was said she decided to leave the chase to the professionals.
Oh, smart.
Which, again, good on you, girl.
Smart. I mean, he's already killed 9 people. So
exactly.
Like, maybe don't press your luck here.
Exactly. 12.
Oh, it's
he'd already killed 12 people. Yes. Which, I don't know if it was reported afterwards. It had to have been. Yeah. He had already killed 12 people. So a police officer on I-75, we know I-75, that's near us, spotted, I don't know why.
It's so close.
I mean, the highway, not this happening. It was in Georgia.
I fucking hate that highway. It's got so many bad memories.
So a police officer on I-75 spots Mark's van, confirms with dispatch that the license plate matched, and he begins tailing from a safe distance while alerting other officers. So they got him, and they're following him. At about 7:50 p.m., Mark turns off the interstate and into a BP station. The officer tailing Mark turns on his lights and briefly turns on his siren to let him know, like, hey, I'm here. So at first, Mark made like he was going to stop at a pump and get gas. But after the lights flashing and the siren, he pulls off about 35 feet away between the pumps and a car wash. Two more police cruisers suddenly whip into the parking lot and they block Mark's van in from all sides. He had nowhere to go. So officers pulled their guns and they cautiously approached the van while yelling at Mark to get out. Officers then see Mark raise both handguns to either side of his head, heard a muffled pop, and then they see his head fall to the steering wheel. So one of the officers carefully approaches the van, opens the driver's side door, and after a quick visual confirmation, all of the officers begin holstering their guns. So it's over. By the end of the rampage, by the end of the day, Mark had killed 13 people, including himself. His victims were 27-year-old Leanne Vandiver Barton, Mark Barton's wife, 11-year-old Matthew David Barton, Mark Barton's son, 8-year-old Michelle Elizabeth Barton, Mark Barton's daughter, 48-year-old Alan Charles Tenenbaum, who was a day trader at Alltech Investment Group, Dean Delawalla, who's 52 years old, he was a day trader at Alltech Investment Group, 6-year-old Joseph Dessert, who was a day trader at Alltech Investment Group. 60.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was like, how the fuck is no. Smart ass 6-year-old? Jesus.
No, 60. 45-year-old, I'm going to butcher this name. I'm so sorry. Jamshid Havash. He was a day trader at Alltech Investment Group. 44-year-old Vadawadi Muralidhara. I'm so sorry. A computer course student at Alltech Investment Group. 58-year-old Edward Quinn, a day trader at Momentum Securities. 38-year-old Kevin Dial, office manager at Momentum Securities. Russell Brown, 42 years old, day trader at Momentum Securities. And 30-year-old Scott Webb, who was a day trader at Momentum Securities.
No. And oh, sorry, go ahead.
I'm going to finish real quick with one of the saddest quotes I think I have ever heard in my life from little Michelle's friend Tiffany, who was interviewed while watching the scene unfold at Mark's apartment. She said, "I'm just trying to get a sneak peek in so I can see my best friend. I just saw them take a bag out. It was a big bag. It must have been the mother. I wish it hadn't happened. I'm mad because now I can't go to Girl Scouts with her. She would whisper things to me when I really needed help with things. I'm probably going to buy some flowers. I wish they would give me something of hers, one of her toys or something. I wish she wasn't even there. I wish she was spending the night with us. It's so stupid. And then she wondered, maybe I could take her cat. And then asked, is the cat dead too? And that is the story of spree killer Mark Barton. For the record, I don't know if the cat was dead.
Okay. First and foremost, like, that kid has really weird emotions.
She was 8. Kids process those things
so differently.
In such a different way.
Oh, it's beautiful almost. It's yeah. almost beautiful because yeah. it's like, is the cat dead?
Like, I look at, I have 2 nieces. My sister used to have goats and they named them. And they had the cutest names. There was Tina and there was Tuna and I can't remember the other names. Well, all of these goats ended up getting some sort of virus and they all died. And they had babies. They all died within a really short amount of time. And they ended up, of course, having to bury them. And the way that these kids, I mean, this was years ago. My nieces are now 8 and 6. So they were a few years younger than they are now. So very little. And the way that they talked about it, it was so matter of fact.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to me the way kids see the world. Like, this poor little girl, this poor little Tiffany, all she could think was, I can't go to Girl Scouts with her now. Like, she would help me with my Girl Scout stuff. You know, I want her to be spending the night. And then her pure little soul is like, maybe I can take her cat.
Right. And I think to me, it's just like, because kids live in, and people don't give kids a lot of credit, but kids live in their own world, but they live heavily in the reality of things. They don't know the reasons of why. That's what they're learning. Like, that's what the world is about, right? We're learning the reasons why. Everything's not so black and white. It's very much, you know, I wonder about the cat. Like, all these things all at once. And the reality of it is, it's like, okay, I know that she's not going to be around anymore. What does that mean to me? Girl Scouts is going to be different.
They think very simplistically.
It's almost beautiful because it's absolutely. Like, as an adult, when bad things happen, we're very left with the why did this happen? We get stuck in so many of those just like unanswerable questions, and the grief that kids feel are, I won't be able to go to Girl Scouts anymore.
Yeah,
I won't be able, like, I wish she was staying the night with me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those things. I mean, I'm sure parents and, you know, other adults, whenever tragedy strikes like that, like, oh, I wish I would have been the one driving that night. I wish, you know, those kind of things always are happening. But I think there is some sort of beauty in the way kids process things that I think we lose as we get older.
Oh, for sure.
And it's almost disheartening. It's like that little Peter Pan feeling in you that never, like, somehow it dies.
It's that particular thing was so sad to me because she's literally sitting watching police take these bodies out of her friend's house. She knows her friend is dead.
Yeah.
And she's just sitting there watching it unfold, and the reporter just happened to be there to get her thoughts, and which, genius, because in times like that, like, I would almost rather listen to a kid talk about it than adults. But it's just it hits home so much, and it makes me so sad that Mark, in his words, felt like he had to do this to save his children from something. But to kind of come back around to what I said I was going to talk about here in a minute. So you mentioned how calculated he had to be because he changed his clothes. I have been wondering this whole time. Obviously, I don't think this ended up going down in the way that he had intended it to, like further in the day. But I'm wondering, yes, he had the wherewithal to change his shirt.
Multiple times.
What? Well, I think just once.
Well, was he not? He was in a different shirt than red at the beginning, wasn't he? Or was he always in red?
I didn't say what he was wearing.
My bad.
No, you're fine.
Anyway.
So he had the wherewithal to change.
Yep.
What was the plan? What were you planning to do? Obviously, it was whatever, if he had a plan, it you know, it wasn't
a very
what it
loosely
was.
Loosely formed plan, regardless. But it was
also
planned.
I believe that he knew that the cop was following him.
I believe. Oh yeah, I mean, he. It's in these situations, and maybe, I mean, at this point, he obviously did a lot of things that I'm like, you can't do that, like, in your head and be right. Like, in his right mind, how did he think this was going to end any differently?
I think he knew.
Right.
Because he said in his letter, I don't plan to live much longer.
Yeah, exactly. I don't plan to live, because, I mean, it was either going to end in a standoff, or I think maybe the thought process, if I was to plan something like this, a security guard is likely going to probably fire back. It might, you know, if I don't slip out at the right time, a cop might come in. You know, there's a lot of different scenarios that could happen that would increase the time of which my death is going to happen. And the other side of it is I might be the one to take my own life.
I believe that he had always planned to take his own life. Oh, okay. I 100% think that was the plan. He was going to do what he needed to do.
And then
off himself.
I mean,
now, whether he got to do everything that he intended to do or not, I do believe he had every intention of ending it himself.
I mean, he had to be meticulous to be able to get out of those buildings. The second building. Because, I mean, they're pretty quick in proximity to each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the people are all over the place, creepy crawling. It's not like they didn't know who to look for. I mean, they straight up called out who shot him in 5 minutes once they got there. So, I mean, like, he had to get out of that second building, like, lickety split in
yep.
order to escape the confines of the police. So, like,
yeah, I mean, the whole thing was done in less than an hour. From
he had to have been like he knew what
from
he was
what
doing.
I could tell from the timeline, he spent about a half hour in the first building and then about 15 minutes, if that, in the second building. You have to remember, too, this was 1999.
Mm-hmm.
So, different times. This was before we were so used to mass murders.
Yeah, and, I mean, they didn't have a lot of, like, those security features that you do now. Like,
yeah. And so cell phones were around, it wasn't as, like, not everybody had one like we do today.
I mean, that was more of the time of pagers. Like, you'd more likely see a pager than you would a cell phone.
Yeah.
Those damn Nokia bricks.
He was definitely moving fast between the two. I mean, he knew get in, get out after he started shooting. And I'm sure he knew when he went from the first building to the second that he wouldn't be able to stand around and chit-chat and spend 30 minutes there. I mean, he knew. It was planned. There was some sort of thought into...
This happened on a Thursday, right?
Yep.
So, killed his wife on Tuesday.
Yep.
Killed his kids on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Killed...
Everybody else on Thursday.
9 other people on Thursday.
Yep.
I mean... From Monday and before, and we all know he killed Deborah and her poor mother. We all know. It's there. Like, I mean, this is a cold, calculated killer.
Yeah. Very, very selfish.
I was going to say, the plan to me is, or not the plan, but the sequence to me is desperation. He's a killer for desperate needs. Like, when he gets desperate, he gets murdery. He got desperate because he wanted to end his relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Best thing, killer. Desperate because he's flat broke, lost a lot of money, his relationship's rocky, he has done, and I fully believe he did something to that little girl.
You think he molested Michelle?
I mean, that... I'm maybe a little partial to this, but I don't think kids just make those kind of accusations out of nowhere.
Sure.
Especially at that age. Like, I mean...
That's fair.
I think it's very, like, that man was obviously very sick.
Yeah.
For a very long time.
Yeah. Well, and I think you can see a pattern starting all the way back at the company that he founded.
Yeah.
All the way back then in 1990, he had anger issues. And it just really seems like it compounded over the years. Mm-hmm. And eventually led up to to this day. And I mean, you can speculate all you want about the killing of Deborah and, you know, the molestation of Michelle, but you can see where it compounded. Again, doesn't make it right. But you can see how it compounded in his sick brain, mm-hmm. to lead up to, well, now I'm going to get retribution, mm-hmm. and I'm going to go shoot all these people up.
In his mind, it was like a cleansing. Something that, like, from what that letter suggests to me, he was very religious in his faith. He believed firmly in, you know, what that religion says to him. So, you know, in another life, I believe that hopefully I'll get a second chance, all this stuff. So he almost took to it kind of like a freeing, this is how I leave the world a better place. I'm going to go and rid the world of all these people who hurt others because of how much they have hurt me. And I'm going to ensure that this hatred and hurt doesn't continue with my lineage. And, you know, I'm stopping the world from further hurt. It's his mind. He's a martyr.
Yeah.
A hero.
If he was telling the truth.
If he's not telling the truth, then he's even more calculated and cold than he's letting on. And
who knows?
I mean, at the end of the day, you killed 12 people.
Yeah, I mean, that's the hard part. And who knows? Do we ever really know Mm-mm. people's motivations?
This is kind of weird and morbid, but like, I wonder if they did any studies on like if there was anything different. I mean, it's 1999, so probably not. But I feel like now in today's day, like that would be a psychological, like cadavers field day.
Like to study his brain?
Yeah. To see if there's any mapping that's different. Because I know that's something that like I like to read up on a lot of stories. And you can see like in certain people who have very tendencies like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe a killer or something like that. They like to study the brain. And it's like either like their medulla oblongata is like much larger. So it secretes like that pheromone or whatever it is. Serotonin. Fuck. What is it? Chemical that like
neurotransmitter
that one makes you angry.
Serotonin doesn't make you angry.
It can.
Serotonin is the happy one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, serotonin is what you get when you're depressed. You get, well, not all the time, but that's what SSRIs are.
Oh yeah,
is serotonin.
Mm.
Okay, I'm saying this all wrong. It doesn't give you serotonin. It just allows you to absorb more serotonin.
But give
serotonin,
me the happy juice.
I don't believe it makes you angry. There are just, I mean, to your point, though, we talked about this when I was studying psychology in college. There are parts of your brain that are, and don't ask me to say much more than this, because I don't remember. There are like certain parts of your brain, of course, that are responsible for certain types of emotions or bodily functions and responses. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. They'll study it to see, you know, maybe there's degeneration in one particular part. When people are alive, they can do brain mapping and see, you know, where activity is higher than others.
Anger starts in the amygdala. That's what I was going to say.
You said medulla oblongata.
I did, no, but I looked it up and I was saying that it says that anger starts with the amygdala, stimulating the hypothalamus, much like the fear response. So anger mm-hmm. and fear, like, brothers.
Jip.
And, like, it's hard to discern that difference. So, I mean, the fear turns into anger when you can't process it quick enough. And that's what happens to me. When I get scared, I get fucking angry.
I don't think you said fear turns into anger when you can't process it quick enough?
Like when you get scared, or like, I mean, obviously I'm being general when I say that. I don't think it legitimately does that. Like that's not a roadmap of how things happen. But fear and anger are very closely related in like the response that you get in your brain. Like the same.
Sure.
Like if you're looking at it like a roadmap, it'll light up the same whenever you're angry as in the same whenever you're fearful.
I don't think that means fear turns into anger if you can't process it.
Not all the time. And that's what I'm saying. It's not the literal sense. But like there is like when you're fearful of something for for so long. And for him, if he was afraid of never being able to marry Leanne or whatever, everything that Deborah did probably made him angry. Because now I'm not going to get what I want. I'm fearful of not getting what I want. And you're stopping me. And that makes me angry.
I don't think I've ever been so afraid of something that it eventually made me angry. I don't think I can say that.
I don't think you're an angry person, though. You don't have a short fuse and will probably not get fired from a company for having a short fuse.
I would hope not. I would hope not.
I like to say that I'm, I mean, just being a little personal here, I've had anger management classes. I've got a pretty quick fuse, I think, when it comes to certain things. I've definitely learned how to...
Y'all, she abuses me.
Oh, bullshit. Fucking dick. I'll say, you're allegedly...
You you abused me.
I'm gonna beat the shit out of you.
See?
I mean it.
This is a spousal abuse.
Spousal, your abuse. I just think that it's... I can see how... Now it kind of makes a little bit more sense why he said the fear is passed from the father to the son.
Mm.
To me. My hypothesis.
Hypothesis. That's a big word. Hypothesis.
Saying I can't use big words?
No.
You want the
I'm
belt?
Just saying that's a big word. You guys, you say you don't abuse me, and you've just done nothing but prove it ever since.
Bitch, bitch. And damn bitch.
Let's wrap this shit show up before you abuse me anymore.
I just want to say, first and foremost, thank you, Kristen, for putting up with my bullshit. Every time you tell a story, I get like I do this. I'm like, what? Tell me more. What about this?
And what? Like, just like, don't touch them babies.
Like, it's so mad.
Sorry.
You're just like, I have so many notes. Just let me get through them. And I'm like, no. But
no, I enjoy that you are so engaged.
I get like
it doesn't super, make me mad.
I get super passionate because like to me, I'm like, what happened?
I'm like, y'all should never go to a movie theater with me. I'm the person that everyone's like, shut the fuck up. I hate watching movies with you.
You just talk. I'm like, wait, this is bullshit. And then I try to analyze everything. Yeah.
We watched, what was that one gay Christmas movie that was good,
was
but you hated?
Good. I liked it.
You didn't say that during the movie. Okay. I can't remember the name of it, but...
it's like Home for the Holidays?
It had Kristen Stewart and Dan Levy in it. It was hey. New this year. Oh, she's asking.
Hey. What was that gay Christmas movie?
No, literally.
Literally. Like, what was
the
that?
Gay one with Kristen Stewart. Dan Levy.
Thank you.
Happiest season.
Sure. Happiest season. So we're watching Happiest Season. And my little gay Christmas love and heart was like, oh, I love it. I also love Kristen Stewart. She's perf. And throughout this whole fucking movie, Monica's like, this is stupid. Why are they doing that? Just talk to her. This is the fucking stupid. And it's like, just watch the fucking movie. Damn it. And then here a few weeks later, she's like, it's a pretty good movie. It's like, was it? Because all you did was shit on it the whole time.
I like to watch movies on my own terms. And I felt very really? Forced to watch that movie. On my own terms, I would have never watched it.
You are such a Grinch. Can we talk about real quick how much of a fucking Grinch Monica is? We're trying to turn her around. Because, I mean, you're a Grinch for good reason.
I think I was pretty good this year.
You were.
I didn't throw my tree down.
You got real excited about certain parts. However, when it comes to Christmas movies, you are still a Grinch.
I will always be a Grinch.
Well, it needs to stop because there are some great Christmas movies. Elf.
I love Elf.
Rachel hates Elf and it gives me rage.
I love Elf.
It is such a good
movie.
You're
taking your fear of me not liking Christmas movies and turning it into anger.
No.
About Elf.
No. I'm taking my anger at Rachel not liking Elf and turning it into more anger.
I like Elf. Elf is a good movie.
It is. I shoved, it is so
what
good.
I shoved peanut butter in the VCR. What was it? Oh, what did you put in the VCR?
Was it chili? Spaghetti?
It was spaghetti.
Yeah, the spaghetti that he put syrup on.
Syrup and sprinkles.
If you haven't seen Elf, you're missing out. But that if is you such haven't a seen good Elf, you're Christmas movie. Oh, it's so good. But she hates it, and it makes me so sad.
Which is surprising, because that seems like very up her comedy alley.
She hates it because it's Will Ferrell. She has certain comedians that she just hates, and so she hates all things that they're in, no matter what. So, like, Adam Sandler is one, which he's not my fave. However, he does have some movies that are really good. For instance, one of my favorite Adam Sandler movies is The Wedding Singer from back in the 90s. That's a good movie. That was the first one that him and Drew Barrymore were in. That's pretty damn funny. And he's not, like, typical Adam Sandler.
And, you know, he's like, put a bullet in my head.
Yeah. But it all was bullshit.
I like Adam Sandler if he didn't play the same character every movie. He can have a different name, but to me, he's the same guy in every fucking
movie.
He
does that now.
Mm-hmm.
He does that now. But back, Wedding Singer, that's not the case.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
I feel like that's such a good movie. Plus, I love Drew Barrymore.
Mr. Deeds, Wedding Singer, what's the other one? Big Daddy. I love those.
Oh, Big Daddy.
Classic Adam Sandler. Love those movies. Even The Longest Yard. I like that one.
That was okay.
That was like when he started to slip. Click into the line.
Waterboy. Classic.
Spanglish. Mama. That was a good one. My mama said, the medulla oblongata.
Waterboy is so good.
Full circle here.
Oh, it's so good. So anyways, she finally agreed to watch The Wedding Singer. Listen, you tell me The Wedding Singer is not good, I punch you in the face because you're wrong. And at the end of it, she's like, I mean, that's okay. And I was just like, no, you are wrong.
That's how I feel about Split. Like, I feel that strongly about Split.
Okay. Why are you bringing that up like I disagree with you?
No. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying you disagree. I'm just saying I agree. I feel that on a spiritual level, but about Split.
Okay.
That's a very good movie to me.
I will watch it one day.
Oh, I know.
I promise you.
Oh, you will.
I will.
I will make you.
Because I know you will murder me otherwise because mm-hmm. you're fucking abusive.
I will Mark Barton you.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Too soon.
Way too soon. Oh, my God. Okay.
Watch Split.
Y'all can find us on the Twitters. You can email us. You can Instagram us.
Insta famous.
And you know what? Monica runs all of our social media. So hop on there and tell her about how she needs to be nicer to me.
Also, y'all.
Please and thank you.
The other day, I was tweet firing a storm from my Twitter. And then I realized it's not on my Twitter.
Was it on the Lawless Heathens Twitter?
I deleted them all. It was like within 3 seconds.
Oh, my God.
But there was a lot in 3 seconds. I was like, fuck.
Oh, my God.
I deleted them all. No one even saw them. Good. The engagements were zero.
Good.
Like, they never were seen by anyone.
I think we have 2 followers on our Twitter, and it's us.
4.
We have 4? Who's the other 2?
I don't know.
Well, look at that.
Thank you.
We have 2 other followers
and welcome.
On Twitter.
The Twitter.
Yes, thank you and welcome. Do we have any other social medias? Oh, you can leave us a voice message on Anchor. I always put the link in the description. We still haven't had any voice messages. Talk to us. Engage with us.
Don't we'll Mark give you Barton shouts us. Out.
Oh my God, no. Don't Mark Barton anybody. Like, tone it down, Sally.
Okay, Wedding Singer. Get the fuck out.
What? What does that have to do with Wedding
I just
Singer?
Feel like the name Sally sounds like something that would be in that movie.
I don't think so. Now that I don't think so.
When Harry Met Sally.
If you haven't seen The Wedding Singer, watch it. It is so like, so it's set in the 80s.
I was going to say it's 80s comedy before we like get your hopes up for it being like a movie
it's
like
2020s. It's 90s comedy, but it's set in the 80s. It's solid.
It's a good movie.
It is. It's pretty damn good solid. Movie.
We're gonna wrap this up before we lose all of you.
This is gonna spark another headache. Just, it's gonna come back after this.
I know you're going too hard. Good. You finally got rid of it. Now you're going too hard in the paint.
No, I think I took 4 painkillers when I got home from work. So I think that's what's getting me good right now.
Finally kicking in.
Oh yeah, I just needed to practically overdose on painkillers to get rid of it.
My liver will not thank me tomorrow, but my head sure will.
You know what? I'm 28. I don't have to worry about that yet. Worry about that in 30 years.
Oh, my God. My next 30 years.
The doctor's going to be like, listen, you 30 bitch. Years ago when you took 400 ibuprofen for a migraine, that's why you need a liver transplant.
I'm going to be in the bed beside you being like, oh, you bitch, get my liver out.
Let's pull that podcast out. I have the receipts.
I have it all. Yeah. Episode 12.
Is this 12?
Mm-hmm. Last week was 11.
Damn, well, you're good. Yeah. 2 weeks ago was 11. Because I suck and I was sick.
I mean, I caused this to be a week late as well. So, like, don't.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
I literally had not done all of my research.
The week before that, when we went to North Carolina.
Dude, that was a month ago.
Oh, my God. It's been a month.
Yeah. That was a month ago. All right, friends. We will see you next week.
Yep.
We will talk to you next week. We're not going to skip another. We're going to get back on a good schedule. I will not be sick forever.
Send us some ideas if you would like to see something different. I like the story. This is a good one.
Engage with us. I would love to talk to you guys.
Engage me.
We are, leave us a review. Rate us, review us, subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
I'm fragile.
We would be so thankful.
I'm scared.
I'm not. I want to hear it. Give me the feedback, man.
We're amazing. We're great.
We have nothing to prove. That's why we have 10 listeners.
Beautiful person.
All right, friends. We'll see you next week. We love you.
Bye.
Bye.